Hey guys, welcome to the Mead House, and thanks for listening to episode 220. I'm Jeff. It's been a little quiet around the house now that I'm the only regular host, and frankly, it's been very quiet for a lot longer than I'd planned to be. We'll get into that in a little bit. Hey, thank you for listening to the Mead House podcast. You can find us absolutely everywhere: iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, now even Amazon Music. You can check us out on the front page of the website, www.meadhouse.com. For the whole list. In this episode, there's no real segment organization for this one, guys. The Mead House has been radio silent for way too long. I wanted to shoot you guys in Mead House Nation an update and get back into the habit of having regular releases again. So before I get into the weeds with that, I need to thank our key holders. They're doing their part to help keep the Mead House podcast free. And you too can join for as little as $2 a month and get some cool rewards and key holder only content. Search the Mead House over at patreon.com or just click the link in the show notes. What am I drinking? It's always been a favorite part of the episode for me. I, in true Mead House fashion, have two glasses ahead of me tonight, and I'm not hesitating when I say that I have been saving this first one since January. This is one of the barrel projects from Sap House Meadery. This is La Bomba. It is an avocado honey varietal mead that's been aged in a mezcal barrel. And I adore this project line that that Ash and the guys are coming up with there. Right off the nose, I get some great floral notes from the avocado honey, and wow, there's kind of an earthiness and a sweetness from that avocado honey that I get, and then right as I perceive that, there's some acidity and some spiciness that I assume must be coming from that mezcal barrel. There's wow, the this is a nice, really complex, really fun, delightful mead. Wow, we talked previously about how much the smoky peat, the smoked honey mead that was aged in a Scotch barrel, just blew our minds. This is kind of like nearly there. This is a very close second to that. It's just, how much I love this as something from the Barrel Project, and they've had a number of really good entries out of this line already. I'm not sure if this La Bomba is still available, but man, pick yourself up a bottle. This is really good, really wonderful stuff. My other glass is—it's a beer. it's from a local microbrewery. I've talked about these guys before. This is the KC Beer Co., spelled Beier, and these guys do traditional style German beers. And this is one of their Dortmunder. It's one of their limited styles. It is a golden export lager, and I'd never heard of this style before, so I figured, why not? I give it a try. So, when I hear the phrase export lager, a couple things come to mind. What I assumed getting into this was this is going to be a maltier, a little bit heavier lager. What I didn't and probably should have assumed was that it was also going to have a heavy degree of hops to it. This is very hoppy for a lager, which is a little off-putting at first, but it's not bad. That said, as that hop flavor kind of lingers on my tongue, I'm not crazy about this hop flavor. It from the kind of the taste, that after aroma smell of it almost feels like it's been, I don't know, like dry hopped with Magnum or something like that. Like not an aroma hop, something a little bit more kind of dank and a little bit resiny, if you will. It's not terrible. It's just a little off-putting and not exactly what I wanted. Still a fairly good beer, but it's probably not something I'm going to get again. So, that being said, Mead House Nation, getting into the show, this is the part where right off the bat, I need to apologize. Time had a bad way of getting away from me, and between my intended break and then a bunch of technical issues, which are frankly embarrassing to talk about because I work in IT, and then a sinus infection that had me talking like I had my nose plugged up for an entire month and a little surgery, I've had a lot of really great excuses for not getting an episode out sooner. Long story short, I owe you guys an apology. It's already June, but I'm working on getting that going, getting back up again, and getting some episodes out for you guys to enjoy. So, I'm sure you guys are all interested in what direction I'm planning on taking the Meat House, and I've been thinking it over a lot with different options over this extended break here. I'm still thinking about doing interviews. You know, the industry professionals from all over, they've been a great addition to this show in the past. They'll probably continue to be in the future, even without my excellent former co-host Ryan's tireless efforts to book them for us. I'm also really interested to talk to other home meat makers and see what you guys are playing with and what you're making on your own. And that, I think, is kind of the sweet spot for this show moving forward. It's a touchstone on the community, if you will. So for me, myself, my whole mead making process is really personal to me. I'm making mead for me, for my friends, for my family. It's my process is really about the fun little experiments that I use to try new ingredients. It's the delicious stuff I come up with combining X yeast and Y varietal honey. It's the cool braggots that I get to make with fun new hops. And in some cases, it's also the embarrassing mistakes that I get to tell you guys about over the course of this whole journey. So, moving forward, I think a lot of this show is going to be a little bit personal for me. I have a lot of projects in mind, and part of the goal of this episode is really just to get a conversation started and invite some commentary with our audience. Maybe even get our audience talking amongst themselves. Now, you guys are probably aware that a long time back, the Mead House hosts made a decision to stop posting recipes. There were plenty of resources available online for mead recipes, some good, some bad. We didn't feel like we needed to be a part of that. And if you guys look way back in the archives, you might even recall an episode where our old friend Mississippi got up on a soapbox and railed on somebody for getting inconsistent results because they were using one of their recipes, one of his recipes, but they were changing things up. And if you weren't following his recipe, well, why were you expecting the same results? This is going to be the first new direction for me here. I'm going to start posting recipes again with a caveat. Unlike Mississippi, I don't want you to work my recipes verbatim. I know there's been a ton of times in this show where I've spoken with a level of authority on a bunch of different topics, but I still don't consider myself an expert or master of the craft or anything like that. If anything, I'd consider myself more of a passionate tinkerer. I mean, I feel like that label also applies to a lot of the audience that I'm talking to tonight, too. So what I want you to do when I'm posting my recipes is to use them as a starting off point, but innovate. Yeah, use a different fruit or a different herb. Change your honey varietal up. Use a different strain of yeast. Add more or less or different hops. What I want you to do, dear listeners at home in Mead House Nation, is to take my personal recipes, which by my own standards I consider are already pretty good, and innovate for yourselves. Then tell me about it. Better yet, jump on the Mead House's Facebook page or subreddit and post your process and results. It'd be good to have some fun results for me to report here on the show. It'd be great if the community working together got into a place where, you know, somebody goes, "Hey, Jim was talking about back sweetening a mead with oleosaccharum, and Pete was talking about using honey instead of sugar to make an oleosaccharum. So I made a honey-based orange peel oleosaccharum and used it to back sweeten my whip braggot. And wow, guys, this orange flavor is intense." Basically, yeah, I'm hoping to encourage some further crowdsourcing, innovation, and thought and communication in the mead community. Maybe put a little focus behind that too. So, what am I focusing on in the short term? The first thing I'm looking at doing immediately is my annual batch of sangria mead for my wife, and we'll get to that in a little bit. Second, this should come as no surprise. I'm looking at making some tasty braggots. I'm looking at doing a summer braggot. Maybe playing with some of these canned kits from our friends over at Brewfirm. But over the course of my break, I came to a few firm decisions when it comes to my braggot game. Anyone who's listened to the past knows my general process for most of the braggots I've made has been starting with a beer style that I wanted to work with, and I find a clone recipe for a particular brand or a recipe for a particular style that I like, and kind of use that to build up a 5-gallon batch of Braggot. I'm moving into a different approach now because I came to two distinct realizations over this break. One, if I want to drink a specific brand or style of beer, I can very easily just go to a liquor store and go get that brand or style in a six-pack. That's generally going to be enough to satisfy my craving without having 5 gallons sitting around needing for me to drink it up. And then I don't have this additional pressure that I'm adding to myself of trying to get it perfect to that brand or that style too, which is just a bummer if I don't hit that. And, you know, like I said, I'm no expert. I don't always hit that mark. The other decision I made is 5 gallons is a lot of beer for one guy to drink. So, moving forward, the batches I'm building from the ground up, so to speak, are going to be built with more of like a flavor or an experience in mind, and using some of the nuts and bolts I learned from my stint mulletting at the local homebrew store. And I'm going to focus on only doing 3-gallon batches, which is still a plenty substantial enough amount, but also less intimidating than needing to down 40 pints all by my lonesome before I can put something else in that keg. Hey, speaking of kegs, my third focus moving forward. I'm still working on fine-tuning that keezer that I was talking about having built right before the break. I made a nice batch of Czech Pilsner using my Anvil Foundry just to test it out, and it came out okay. My big problem, though, was that I couldn't get a consistently good level of carbonation off this thing. I'd pull a pint, and it was a little flat, so I added a little bit more pressure, let it sit for a couple days. It was overcarbed. It went back and forth like a seesaw. So I'll be using a number of these Braggot projects and other projects that we'll be talking about in a minute to really work on fine-tuning that carbonation level, getting it just right, and working on always being able to pull a perfect pint whenever the desire suits me, right? I might look at trading out faucets, tweaking my hose lengths, things like that. To be frank, some hands-on reviews, playing with tech, trying to streamline my process, and giving you guys advice for streamlining yours. That seems like it could be a useful addition to the podcast moving forward into the future here, too. So, anyway, finally, getting to the last thing I want to focus on, number four, session meats. So, a couple weeks back, my wife and I decided to take our kiddo to the zoo on Memorial Bay, and as we were walking around the elephant enclosure, they had a little stand there selling pint cans of beer and hard seltzer from a local brewery, Boulevard. You've heard me talk about them on the show before. It was hot, guys. I was very tempted, and one of these seltzer flavors caught my wife's eye hard, cherry blossom and lime. I was all set to get us a couple of these cans when I got a little closer and looked at the price. $11 each. You guys know from me talking in the past, I can be cheap sometimes. So in that moment, I decided, you know what? Just stick with the water. We can roll by the liquor store on the way home and pay that for a whole six-pack. Well, like the dutiful husband I was, I also got my wife a sampler pack of these seltzer flavors. They're selling them under the brand name Quirk, but it's by Boulevard. And I wound up trying a few of these seltzers myself. I've had a couple different brands of seltzers in the past, generally, and I can say I'm not a fan. Even still, as seltzers go, these were some of the best I'd ever tried. I'm still not exactly racing to get out and get another 12-pack, but you know, this whole experience reminded me of something we talked about a while back. The idea of making a session mead, something in the neighborhood of 4 to 5% ABV, relatively dry, relatively low calorie, low carb, whatever you want to call it, where you still get all those honey flavors along with a myriad of flavors of yeast or fruit or spices or hops that we decided to work with. In short, light, low alcohol, low calorie, refreshing summer mead, but with a ton of flavor behind it. Something that could really provide a better alternative than these seltzer things that were the big fad for the last couple years now. Guys, this one has me excited. I am chomping at the bit to get started down this line of research, so expect more on this soon. But anyway, let's circle back to the top. I told you we would get to the sangria mead, and this is going to be the first recipe that I am providing to you guys because Frankly, this is one of my oldest and most reiterated recipes, and I think it's got some good potential for tweaking. You'll see in a minute. My wife and I have made this just about every summer for 4 years now, 5 years now, and this is a great thing for her to have on hand when we have guests over, when we go over to somebody's house for dinner. It's just a nice bottle to break out. So here's the way that we are currently iterating this recipe. You start with a 5 gallon Vintner's Best Blackberry Wine Kit and a 1 gallon Wine Expert Merlot Kit. You can pretty much ignore all the stuff that comes with that Merlot kit because we're going to be taking like the additives and the oak particles and stuff like that. We're going to be doing our own thing with that. So you'll need a few pounds of honey. For this part, I use something basic like wildflower because, to be honest, I'm expecting there to be a lot of other flavors fighting for dominance already, and most of the sugars in that honey, they're just going to get eaten up by the yeast anyway. We're going to play with varietals a little bit when we get to back sweetening, though, so don't worry. You're going to need enough water to make a 6 gallon batch. You can use treated tap water, spring water, RO water with the little minerals and stuff added to it, whatever your flight of fancy is. And then let's get started. So naturally, you're going to sanitize all your equipment and your fermenter. You're going to put the juice from the Blackberry Wine Kit and the Merlot Kit in the fermenter and dilute that until you've got 6 gallons. At this point, I'm probably going to add some bentonite to help it clear later and some FT Rouge Berry for some tannin structure, but you should consider those ingredients to be optional, really. So take a hydrometer reading and see where you stand. When I'm mixing this up, I tailor my starting gravity to what I want my alcohol content to be, and in this case, I'm usually shooting for 12%. For starting gravity, that's 1090 or 21.5 bricks, if that's the scale you like. So add your honey a little at a time, keep checking with your hydrometer until you get right about where that is. Now, that's going to add on top of your 6 gallons, but that's okay because we're going to lose some of this to sediment anyway, and that tends to give you right around 6 gallons when you're done with the fermenting and the lees and the back sweetening. It works out pretty well this way. So once you're all at your starting gravity, pitch yourself 10 grams of our old friend 71B, slap an airlock on it, and wait. Once you see some fermentation activity in the airlock, give it about 24 hours. And then it's time to whip out the calculator and figure out how much Fermade K is going to be needed. I like using the old Tiosna 2.0 formula. That's TIOSNA, or Tailored Inorganic Stacker Nutrient Addition formula. Look for it on Google. There's tons of places for it. If you're using my same starting gravity, that's 9 grams, almost exactly on the nose. If you're going to go higher or lower gravity, you're going to have to do the math yourself, but I promise it's not that hard. Plenty of people like to add this in stages at this point, but for my money, if it's under 14% potential ABV, I'm pretty comfortable just putting it in all up front. So do that, give it a good stir, replace the airlock, and then I like to degas it once or twice a day for the first week. After that, you can just let it ride. As soon as the gravity readings get stable, I rack it into a clean bucket or carboy, and unless I'm gonna oak it in the secondary stage, I hit it with our old friends potassium sorbate and potassium metabisulfite, and then we get to the really fun part. Because let me tell you guys, back sweetening is where this one really starts to shine. We'd like to doctor it a little at a time using a combination of honey and fruit juice concentrates. And this is a good place to break out your varietal honeys too. I could see off the top of my head like an orange blossom honey or a blueberry blossom honey. They would really fit this flavor profile very nicely. But frankly, let your own creativity be your guide here. You guys figure out what sounds good to you and roll with it. For most of our fruit juice concentrates, we'll get those little cans of frozen fruit juice concentrate from the store, but I also like to add a quart of the frozen, it's not frozen, the liquid black cherry concentrate from health food stores or something like that. That has a nice flavor that I like adding to the meat here. I think it played very nicely with the other flavors too. And once we get to this point, I mean, this kind of becomes a little bit of a party for us. We add a couple ounces of one thing or a couple ounces of another. We mix it up and get a couple of tasting glasses. And we try it and we say, "Oh yeah, I like what that did," or no, that doesn't do as much for me. We need to add more. We need to add less." And obviously there are a bunch of different components at work here, but you can just kind of take your time, enjoy it, and suss it out. I mean, honey obviously is going to add some sweetness to the party. It's going to add some mouthfeel, and it's going to add a little bit of body, things like that as well. So you can play with that a little bit, and that can be a useful addition. Some of your fruit juices can also add acidity and really brighten up this meat in surprising ways. The classic flavor profile of sangria includes a little bit of orange, but I've found using some pineapple juice or some lime juice or white grape can add some really nice acidity too. That really just makes it adds a level of interest that is fantastic here. And yeah, if you're not getting quite what you're looking for, there's also the possibility of adding, an ounce or two of food grade glycerin for that mouthfeel, or a little bit of citric acid or acid blend to brighten it up further. I mean, I'm not gonna tell on you. Do what you want. So, another thing to consider here is brandy. And in like classic sangria recipes, brandy is usually added as a component. You could totally fortify this with brandy or port or sherry or heck, any hard alcohol that you find potentially interesting. I generally don't because, if my wife has a work friend over to chat and decompress after a hard day, they can split a bottle, and her work friend is still able, after a couple hours of talking and drinking, to drive home safely, which is an important thing to consider, and that works out very well for her. So I tend to leave it at that without adding any extra ABV to this guy. But if that's the direction you want to take it, by all means. This is where your creativity can really come out to shine. Well, anyway, as they say, that is that. That is the end all be all of the recipe. At that point, once we've got the flavor profile nailed down, I usually use some Dual Fine to make it nice and clear, and then we bottle. We'd like to bottle this in 750 clear wine bottles, cork it, and put some of those little shrink caps on it, different color to differentiate, this year's vintage, so to speak. This recipe is a little bit of an oddball to start this conversation with, but I like this for a couple different reasons. For one, this is one that like I said, I have made every year for a number of years, and it works. I'm really happy with this recipe. Pretty much everyone that I've served this to has enjoyed this one, so I have a lot of confidence in it. At the same time, there are so many different directions that you guys could take this in, as far as, you could change the starting ingredients, use a white wine base and a pear. Geez, you could do so many different things with the back sweetening, as far as different varietal honeys or fruit juices or, geez, anything. The possibilities are wide and endless here, and I'm curious to see what you guys come up with. And of course, you may hate this idea too, and I'm willing to take that criticism as well. So, I, by all means, have at it. Anyway, that is the first recipe I want to provide you guys. And I am excited to hear what you guys think. That's going to wrap it up for tonight's episode. Thank you, as always, for listening, hanging out with me. If you want, you can drop me a line on our Facebook, Reddit, or our email, info@themeathouse.com. So, that said, it's time for me to wipe down the bar, get the chickens back into the coop. Until next time, my friends. Good night.